A Supreme Court ruling could change the way student athletes are recruited and compensated.
We're not talking astronomical amounts of money, but we are talking about a whole host of different ways that college athletes can now, at least somewhat, derive some of the benefits of the labor that they provide.
And U.S. stocks are back up after a disappointing downturn last week. Plus, why resume gaps aren't such a red flag anymore. It's Monday, June 21st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. U.S. stocks rebounded today after the Dow closed out its worst week since October on Friday. The Dow rose more than 500 points today, or 1.8%. The S&P 500 added 1.4%, and the Nasdaq gained 0.8%. Shares of industrial and financial stocks led today's rally, but Bitcoin, Ether, and shares of cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase all fell today. Cryptocurrencies have been under pressure in recent weeks as China has intensified its clampdown on Bitcoin mining. Drug maker Moderna is boosting production of its COVID-19 vaccine, adding two new production lines at a former Polaroid plant outside of Boston. The goal is to get one line up and running by the fall and the other by early next year. Company officials say that will help increase overall production capacity by 50% at the plant. Moderna and its manufacturing partners are also expanding production capacity outside the U.S. They're aiming to triple annual global output of vaccine doses to about 3 billion in 2022. Five top executives at electric truck startup Lordstown Motors sold more than $8 million in company stock in February, according to regulatory filings. That was just weeks before Lordstown posted its first year-end results after going public. In its financial results, the company reported a net loss of 23 cents a share for the quarter, more than double analysts' expectations, according to FactSet. Auto industry reporter Ben Foldy has more.
I think what stands out, too, is that at most companies, there would be a blackout period prohibiting these types of trades. So one of the people trading is the chief financial officer. The chief financial officer, I can't say for certain, but presumably would have some knowledge of how the company did in the quarter that had closed, you know, a month before. In order to avoid the appearance that that person is trading on that information before the rest of the market knows about it, most companies prohibit that kind of trading in that space. These trades, basically, they do not appear to have happened as part of a kind of pre-scheduled plan. And, you know, they come basically before a bunch of bad news about the company comes out.
Today, the company's stock fell about 5.5% to $10.07. Shares are down about 50% for the year. Four of the five executives declined to comment through a Lordstown Motors spokesman. The fifth, former chief financial officer Julio Rodriguez, could not be reached for comment. Last week, the company said a special committee formed by its board concluded that the executive stock sales, quote, were made for reasons unrelated to the performance of the company. And Netflix has reached a multi-year deal with acclaimed filmmaker Steven Spielberg's production company, Amblin Partners. According to the deal, the studio will make multiple new films for Netflix, but they won't start appearing on the streaming service until later this year at the earliest. The deal is big for Netflix. It's still the most popular streaming service worldwide, but it's facing more competition from rivals Disney Plus and Amazon. Coming up, a Supreme Court ruling that could change college athletics.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
For years, college athletes have been in a battle with the National Collegiate Athletic Association over compensation for playing on their teams. Today, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that the NCAA's limits on benefits and compensation violate antitrust law because they limit other schools from competing for talent. The decision is expected to have broad implications for college sports. Joining me now with more details is Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Brent Kendall. Hi, Brent. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, Brent, this was a unanimous ruling. Can you explain in more detail the court's reasoning here? Tell us more about the decision.
What the court did today was not open up full unlimited direct payments to athletes, but they said the NCAA had gone too far in restricting, you know, college athletes from getting a whole host of things, even if it's not direct unlimited compensation. And so, I mean, the effect of the ruling today now means that schools can compete for recruits by offering things like, hey, you know, if you come, we'll also pay for graduate school for you or vocational school, or we can help you get internships. We'll buy you a laptop, things of that nature. The other thing here is there's a system now in which the NCAA allows schools to pay athletes certain limited amounts of money for stellar athletic achievements. This amounts to nearly like $6,000. And so what lower courts had said is that, look, you know, schools need to be able to offer those same kind of payments to people who do well in the classroom. So now if you're an athlete at a school or you're considering a school, the school can say, look, you know, we can give you $6,000 if, you know, you come and you have a 3.0 GPA. And so it's things like that that the ruling today opens the door for. So, I mean, we're not talking astronomical amounts of money, but we are talking about a whole host of different ways that college athletes can now at least somewhat derive some of the benefits of the labor that they provide to schools beyond just tuition and room and board and the basics of what they've gotten previously.
So, Brent, you touched on this a bit already, but what does this ruling really mean for student athletes?
It means now that they will at least have some avenues to get more from schools than they've gotten previously. I mean, I think the broader impact today really is this is a direct legal blow to the NCAA, which forever has defined college sports around this concept of amateurism and then used amateurism as sort of their shield to deflect any and all arguments on why athletes should be compensated more. And they said, well, if we compensated athletes more, then, you know, these college contests cease to be amateur affairs, and then the public won't watch them. And so what the court said is, you know, giving athletes some benefits doesn't fundamentally change the nature of college sports, and it's not a situation where the NCAA has provided the kind of justifications one would need to engage in that level of, like, restrictive activity.
So where does this leave the NCAA, and what have you heard from the association about this ruling?
So the NCAA is basically now dealing with a headache on several fronts. I mean, there are a bunch of states that have passed laws that are going to allow athletes to start profiting from what's called name, image, and likeness. So this would open the door for endorsement deals. Some states have these laws, some states don't. Some are set to go into effect here next month. The NCAA had been contemplating its own rules, but it hasn't quite gotten around to working something out yet. It's also asked Congress to step in, which could avoid some of the, like, state-by-state discrepancies if federal lawmakers would pass sort of a national standard. But that hasn't happened yet either. And so, at least in the near term, the NCAA is just facing a sea of change, and it's not clear yet how they're going to navigate it.
So in the midst of all this, as you mentioned, several states have already changed their laws to address compensation for college athletes. Does today's Supreme Court decision bolster those moves, or how does that factor into these efforts state-by-state?
This doesn't really directly apply to any of that at all. I mean, the issues here are different from those issues. I mean, you know, I think the same general principle about that the court embraced, where this whole notion that the NCAA just can't, with a broad brush, restrict athletes from, you know, being compensated in some form or fashion for what they do, is kind of the tenor of things moving forward. And so that may play into if we end up with legal battles over some of the state laws. But nothing about what the court said today directly implicates those cases. I mean, what the NCAA has said since the ruling came down is they stressed that the court did say that, you know, that the NCAA does have room to adopt reasonable rules, which suggests that they will try to do so. And the NCAA president said, look, we remain committed to working with student athletes and trying to get Congress to help us chart a path forward. And so, again, there's a lot the NCAA will have to work out here in the next weeks and months.
Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Brent Kendall. Brent, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And And finally, if you're one of the millions of people who are unemployed during the pandemic and you're worried about the gap on your resume, we've got good news. Experts say, don't sweat it. A survey by job site Monster last fall found that nearly half of the 400 U.S. recruiters believed resume gaps had shifted from being a red flag to being acceptable. Our Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinzig says employers are aware that the last year threw people curveballs, and it's a good market to be looking for work.
Companies really want talent right now. Things are really heating up, and it can be hard to find the people they need if you have, you know, a skill that companies really want. I think that also makes it safer to be talking about some of this stuff. So, you know, if then in a few years we go through a downturn and a situation where there, you know, there are layoffs and it's, you know, it's the ball isn't as much in employees' court, that could change. But I think overall we're nudging towards more kind of openness and patience and flexibility from employers.
You can check out more tips from Rachel on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing, tomorrow morning. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll also be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.